from Santa Barbara, California. The Timeless Voyager with Bruce Stephen Holmes. Talk radio for the new age. Interviews with well-established professionals in the fields of New Age philosophy, holistic healthcare, energy healing, psychic phenomena, and extraterrestrial encounters. And now, Bruce Stephen Holmes, the Timeless Voyager.
Hello, everyone. This is Bruce Stephen Holmes, Timeless Voyager Radio. And with me today, Aliana Scurlock. She is part of the Foundation for Life Action. And actually, they're located in Los Angeles. They are, I guess, the publishers. Life Action Press is the publishing house.
A Course in Miracles is published by Foundation for Inner Peace.
All right. Who is Tara Singh?
Tara Singh is a gentleman who is a teacher, author, and lecturer. He does workshops on A Course in Miracles. He's in his early 70s, and for the last, I'd say 20 years or so, he has worked with students on a one-to-one basis. And he had a close association with Mr. J. Krishnamurti and with Dr. Helen Schuchman, the author, the scribe of A Course in Miracles.
Okay, so we are talking specifically about the new book, Awakening a Child from Within. You are the compiler of the book.
Yes, compiler and editor of the book.
And it was taken from a number of workshops and made into tapes, transcribed, and then put together by you.
Yes. Also, it was taken from dialogues with parents and with children. So there are chapters on actually working with children, how to awaken children.
Tara Singh states in the book that this awakening begins right at conception.
Yes.
What is your understanding of that?
Well, basically, he says that we must really prepare for the coming of a child. And the atmosphere that the husband and wife have together and their intent to raise a child consistent with his purpose, his life purpose, then would draw to them a child of a higher vibration, a child who has that pure intent. So it's very important to have a harmonious atmosphere, to have a great affection and warmth between the couple, and then when the child's born, to welcome him with peace and a great warmth, with light music, with a caring atmosphere.
So this is very reminiscent of Conscious Conception, a book by Janine Baker, I believe it was.
Yes, it's very similar to that. I think they're eternal kind of principles.
All right, so the principle here is that you are supposed to be aware of the fact that you're making a child.
Yes, yes.
It's not supposed to be a surprise.
Right. Well, that's. I think that the affection and the warmth and the togetherness that the sexual act has in it, he says it's extremely important in welcoming or providing the atmosphere for the child to come. That conception itself is an involuntary action. It's not necessarily something that you or I do. It's part of life action that brings about the birth of this child. I think that spark of mystery and wonder definitely is there when a child is born. And what happens oftentimes, what I've seen with mothers is that, and fathers too, but more primarily with mothers, is that they inherently know to protect and give a certain atmosphere of peace to this baby. And then soon after the baby's born, they start violating what they know through conditioning from the media, you know, buying mm-hmm. things, having toys, tremendous amount of stimulation.
Now, you're not against toys.
No.
But certain types of toys, I guess.
Yes, more just being sensitive to what's really helpful to the child, let's say, not to overly stimulate babies. That that young children have a certain space around them, silence, a peace, allowing them to make their own toys, make their own interest, you see, so that they're not necessarily always being stimulated from the outside.
We are talking about awakening a child. This is not about the child within us, which is a different...
No, and the awakening process that he's talking about is that every single human being is born for a function, for something that gifts that they have been born with to actualize in this life. He says what happens with most people is that they're born and they're diverted from realizing their function.
Now that's through education.
Through education. The whole society's mm-hmm. values, especially the Western American society, where you spend 12, 16, 18, 20 years in school. And the whole discovery process, the sensitivity, listening within is squelched. So many people know that they're meant for something and they don't know what that is.
Now, inner awakening cannot be taught. That's one of the most important points here in the first few chapters.
Yes, inner awakening cannot be taught. It's not something from the external.
So the parents can't say, we'll hire a nanny.
Right.
Or we'll send the child to the best schools,
right.
and this will take care of all the things that are necessary. This is definitely, it seems, diametrically opposed
mm-hmm.
to the way that people generally think in our country.
It's a whole new perspective, and it's also geared toward responding to the needs of the culture at this time. People are very disillusioned. Or if they're not disillusioned now, the disillusionment is around the corner for many, many people because all of our values are seriously being questioned, you know, of acquisitiveness, of, you know, going to school, getting a job. You know, the whole job market is topsy-turvy right now. And people are looking, what is my life really for? And connected with that is, what am I doing with and to my children? What is our educational system doing?
All right, I'll tell you one. Let's take for a moment the concept of the Course in Miracles, and let's
mm-hmm.
talk about it for a moment.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Helen Schuchman was the scribe who took down that information.
Right.
Course in Miracles mm-hmm. for our listeners is what?
Course in Miracles is a set of three books, basically for inner awakening. It's a self-study program. It consists of a workbook that has a lesson for every day of the year. The text goes into explaining why we feel separated from one another, why we feel isolated from God. Many people have this shared feeling that God does not even know I exist or care. And in contrast, the reaction to that is we project a God of our beliefs, a God of thought, and then worship that God while we are in conflict.
Now, what is wrong with that?
What's wrong with that is that the conflict between what I'm saying or believing or thinking consciously, intellectually, is opposed to how I feel internally, which is cut off, not connected with the source of my being. I feel guilty. I feel sinful. This is like a shared...
Mm-hmm. So in other words, when I go to, most people pray in the evening, all right, before they go to bed. Okay,
yeah.
So when a person is praying...
They're coming from a space that's not whole, that I must be bad, I must be sinful, I'm separated, cut off, and you're praying to God outside of you to kind of compensate for that feeling. The Course has a revolutionary look at that. It says absolutely not, that... This sense of separation that we feel, that when the ego separated from God and created this world in opposition, is just a part of our reality. The fact is that we are not separated from God.
So again, this is an illusion. This is, as Dr. Deepak Chopra has said, a mistake of the intellect.
Right, right. But what the Course does is it takes you step by step through the process where you begin to question your thoughts, see what is the basis of my thought, why am I fearful, why do I have anxiety, insecurity, and you call those into question and ask for help and begin to make this contact inside, which is the process of awakening.
So the Course in Miracles is, as you said, one particular approach.
Say.
Well, I'm thinking, like you said, daily. There's one for each day. There's a lesson for each day.
Yes, there's a lesson for each day.
Are you able to accomplish the lesson per day, or are we talking about?
Well, it takes a tremendous amount of attention,
mm-hmm.
and I think a very clear intent that your inner life is far more important than your outer life. If your whole life is sparked by your inner life, then your outer life will also go better. You'll have more to give to everyone you meet. And this change in values is one of the main corrections that the Course in Miracles is meant to bring about. One thing I want to clarify is the Course in Miracles is not a religion.
That's important. Now, that's an important point.
Yes.
So a person in any religion can study Course in Miracles.
Yes, yes.
And begin to feel closer to his or her God as they perceive God to be.
Yes, and also with the real value of it that I found is it makes it possible to comprehend why I feel the way I do and why everyone I see is in conflict or acting the way they do. It makes one's world much more understandable.
All right, so now the book, Awakening a Child from Within, is, again, like I said, based and somehow always integrating the teachings from Course in Miracles.
Yes, he shares the principles of A Course in Miracles through awakening your own child.
So the purpose of this is so that your child, when he or she becomes an adult, is not left feeling separate or cut off.
Exactly, but the shocking thing that he says in the book is that by the age of 21, your child should know his function and be prepared to step into that.
Now, the function, not necessarily that he or she is supposed to be a plumber,
no,
or a computer programmer, no, or those things. That's not what we're talking about. We're not talking about a career. We're talking about this intuitive,
yes,
or I guess, as they say in the Vedic scriptures, dharma.
Yes, exactly. Yes, his life path, what his gifts are. A child may have a gift of healing. He may have a gift with nature, you see, to comprehend the laws of nature and know how to bring the earth back into balance through plants. You see, he may have a contribution to make to all mankind. And what we do when we limit him to a job is we isolate him from ever discovering his function.
Right now, how is awakening this child through this lesson, let's say, or this particular pattern of education? I'm going to say that, I can't think of any other word to use, different from ordinary education that we're used to.
Well, the thing that he says in the book is many times parents hear him and they wonder, well, are you saying I should not send my child to school? You know, is it a reaction, let's say, to the whole educational system? What he says is that if you raise a child from birth with an atmosphere of love and affection, that the child is nurtured in a whole way and is strong within himself, he can deal with anything. He can deal with an educational system that may not be the best, but he has his own clarity. He knows his own mind. He won't be false to himself.
All right, let's define a few terms.
Mm-hmm.
Love and nurturing.
Okay.
Now, not that this is something, someone's going to say, well, you know, these are rather ambiguous terms.
Right.
So specifically, according to Awakening a Child from Within, which is the book, all right,
let's say many children, when they're very young, I'd say probably all of us, something happens between the child and the parents that forces the child, or the atmosphere brings about a conclusion in the child's mind that he is not loved. Father or mother may be harsh. They may be preoccupied. They may not really even care about what's going on with that particular child.
So you're saying all of us have this happen?
I'm saying many, many times something happens. I form a conclusion that I am not lovable.
Oh, for a moment.
For a moment.
Okay, not like your overall I was not loved.
No, for a moment.
Okay.
Something happens when a child is a
usually
baby.
It's during punishment.
Right, exactly, exactly. Okay. But that the impression is gotten by the child that I am not okay, that I'm not lovable. And then like defense or a wall is built up against that feeling, and the child begins to perceive and act through that feeling that I'm not okay, I'm not lovable. What Tara Singh says basically is that from the time the child starts to move, or is actually from the time of birth, the parent should introduce to the child the awareness that he is loved, that he comes first. the way they do that, let's say if a child is crawling towards something dangerous, just the way you would pick him up and move him, take the danger out of his way, the sound of your voice communicates to the child that he's loved, he's safe. The feeling of safety, the feeling of protection is very, very important to young children.
Well, and then this is because a lot of times parents in their wanting to save a child from some kind of danger will scare the child more than the danger would have.
Right.
Just and by their reaction as to what was going to happen or what exactly. They perceived would happen.
And very subtly we are communicating, be afraid, be careful, watch out. Just one, two, three incidents. You see, our conditioning gets communicated to our children, and the bottom line is usually fear or it's love. Those are the two things the Course says, that we have basically only two emotions, either fear or love, and you're transmitting that to your children all the time.
Now the nurturing?
The nurturing is this attention and awakening the awareness that the child is loved. Tara Singh talks about the importance of affection, of massage, of, you know, having time for quiet together with a child, you know, sharing stories, sharing lives that are heroic so that children have something to aspire to before a child goes to bed as they grow. The beautiful thing about this book is it goes from the time of birth, basically, through young adulthood and shows you how to grow with your child, that the birth of a child is a blessing to the parents because it helps the parents also awaken themselves.
The brain is subordinate to inner awakening. This must be why this whole idea of this inner awakening cannot be taught, but actually has to be shown.
Yes, yes. What Tara Singh says is there's the brain, and then there's also the mind. And the mind is part, actually, of the mind of God. And a true teacher, what he does is he awakens the mind of a child, or awakens the mind of a student, as someone that he's working with, so that they realize their connection with the mind of God. And you can only do that when the brain itself is still. You can only realize your connection with your eternal self or with the mind of God when the brain comes to silence.
So we're really talking about some type of contact with the transcendental field.
Yes, yes, exactly. But see, what he says is that children are more accessible to that. They naturally have more space around them. What we do is we crowd their space with television, with toys, with stimulation, with poor food. You see, we kind of bombard them thinking it's the right thing, but in actuality, it's cutting them off further.
And now, then, of course, I didn't mean to interrupt, but every parent has a reason for doing this, and it's always because of their need to take care of through, you know, jobs and things like that. And we all feel, well, what are we going to do with our child if we can't afford babysitting?
Right.
So, I mean, there is a dilemma here when you talk about this concept of nurturing. I'm sure that every parent who's listening to this says, well, this is the world of the ideal.
Right.
How am I supposed to do this in this day and age?
Yeah, that's the one thing that he does address in the book, that what we do is we settle always for compromise. We rarely demand the highest of ourselves. He says, if you're starting from a place that I want to do the right thing by myself, for my own integrity, by my husband and husband toward his wife, and toward my child or our children, then just that intent, life will support. I'm not saying, or Tara Singh is not saying, not to have babysitters or not to find schools for children, but to find people who also have that nurturing quality, who have some other space awakened in them that they have something to give to children. Children need other children. They need friction. They need the kind of rough and tumbleness that comes. This is not a book for overprotecting children. This is a book for introducing a child to his strength, his capacity to deal with anything that life would present.
Let's talk about the term desire.
Desire in relationship to love?
Mm-hmm.
The way that he introduces love and desire is that true love that's not a projection. that I want you to meet my needs, has no desire in it. When two people meet and they're coming from a place of giving, a place of genuine sharing where the hearts are really meeting, desire or what I want for myself, for my gratification or my feeling good, doesn't really enter into it. When two people really share, desire is not really there.
So I think we're talking about the idea then, as you said, there's no one is taking.
Yes, this coming is the whole idea.
No
giving.
One's taking. Yes. Because if both people are giving,
yes,
there's no reason to take.
Yes,
taking occurs when one person can't give.
Yes, but you see, I think many, many people feel, even in intimate relationships, they feel lonely because they may want to give but not know how. And this kind of impulse toward being concerned only about myself, you see, actually makes you feel cut off. And what he introduces is the potential in really meeting another person when there's not my needs or my desires at the forefront.
And this starts again with this idea of not feeling cut off from God.
The wholeness is very, very important. If you could raise a child this way where he's whole in himself, knows his function or has some sense that his life is for something greater than just getting an education or a job, he's going to be drawn to a different kind of woman or man. He'll want a different kind of relationship. That child will bring different children into this world, and then the whole culture would change. So it's very whole.
As long as we're on this, giving mm-hmm. versus wanting.
Uh-huh. The difference of that? See, we're conditioned to want. We're conditioned to watch out for myself and always move from a motive, however subtle it may be. And what he introduces is when you come from a space of giving, let's say within my marriage or relationship, things are rough. My husband's interest in me is fading, let's say. Or we've been together so long, we know each other so well. We know each other's likes and dislikes, and there's no longer the spark of newness. How would I bring something new to that relationship? He says, find something that you can give to it. Don't ask for your husband or wife to change. Don't want things to be different on the outside. Find what you can give to bring the relationship to more love, more affection, more warmth.
All right, how about an example?
An example that he gives?
Yeah.
He tells a wonderful story. And did you read the story about the African woman? Should I tell that?
Definitely, that's what.
Okay, he tells a story about it might be a Swahili tale about an African woman, her husband is going to other women in the village, and she knows it, and it's like breaking her heart, and so she goes to the medicine man, who's like the priest in the village, and says that what can she do? She loves her husband, but he doesn't come home at night. And so he says, well, I'll be able to help you, but the first thing I'll need is a piece of hair from the lion's mane. So if you bring that to me, then I'll tell you what to do. So she goes away and she wonders how she's going to ever get the courage to do this. And then so she worries about it for a week or so. And then finally she has an idea that she'll take a lamb into the jungle. So she takes a newborn lamb and walks into the jungle with great fear and trepidation. And the lion sees her coming and there's this roar. And quickly she sets the lamb down and runs away. And every day she does this. She takes the lamb into the jungle and then gets closer and closer to the lion. And he sees her coming, and after a short while, he says, what is this? How fantastic, my dinner's coming to me. And so he starts to look forward to her coming. And then he allows her to get closer and closer to him because he realizes he doesn't need to be afraid. And finally, he allows her to watch and be there while he's eating the lamb. Then he allows her to sit beside him. Another day he allows her to touch him, to stroke his back, and then finally she just takes a snip from his hair and takes it to the medicine man. This took weeks to do. And she gives it to him and she said, here's the mane or piece of the mane from the lion. And he looks at her and he says, if you put only a fraction of the energy into winning back your husband that you put into getting the mane from the lion, you will win him back. I guarantee it. We don't want to give that much to our relationships. We are conditioned to take the easy road and to stop short and not to see our marriages as a lifelong commitment.
Does the parent have to be awakened to awaken the child?
No. What Tara Singh says is that just your intent to do the right thing and be responsible, having a child will help awaken you, but you need not be awakened beforehand. He said that's the real beauty of having children, is it gives you an opportunity to begin again with yourself and to renew and rebuild yourself with your child. That it's like a precious opportunity that's given to parents. But you need not be awakened. He says even that if your intent is to raise your child in the right way, that when the child needs a teacher to awaken him at the age of 9 or 10 or 11, someone will come to him. Life will meet that need if that's your need. Let's say if a child was gifted in dance or music or with nature, then somehow life would bring that teacher to your awareness.
So the parent's only job, really, is to awaken the child. That's it. And everything else will fall into place.
Right, yes.
So that's how easy everything is when you work in conjunction with the laws of nature.
Yes, yes. That's what the one thing he says is that we are connected. We are part of life, of one life, which is very harmonious and helpful. Most people, because their values are not connected with life itself, are in opposition to life. They're not working with life. Once you align your values to the values of life, of awakening yourself, awakening the child, then everything starts to fall into line.
Aliana, what does the book offer young adults, let's say from 18 to 25?
Right. I think that if there's the yearning inside for something true and a young person read this book, what it would do is it would make life understandable to them. It would help them realize that their particular life is meant for something greater, something more. It also would help them have more integrity in relationship to relationships that they would get into. They wouldn't get into casual sexual relationships with many different people, but they would be introduced to the sense of listening within and seeing, is this a person that I can really communicate with, can really possibly want to live closely with and to share my life with? What he does is he talks about the significance of sex and the importance of conserving that energy and not...
And that term, of course, is celibacy.
Well, celibacy not in an absolute sense. He talks about celibacy in a sense of also being true to how you feel inside. Like many times I think young people are forced into sex because everyone else is doing it. And you feel that if you're not doing it, something must be wrong with you.
Or the other possibility is not that you're forced, but that you would like to find out what it is.
Yes, yes, most definitely. There's that too. But I think many times people feel they're in a false position and they don't know that it's all right not to do that, you know. But he also says that the sexual energy is very important to be conserved for this awakening, that the energy within the body flows through the body and facilitates the awakening process.
Now we're talking about the Kundalini.
Exactly, exactly.
I mean, that's basically what we're saying here. I mean, we're talking about the Kundalini lies at the base of the spine.
Yes.
What is your understanding of Kundalini for our listeners?
The Kundalini, he doesn't actually get into that word in the book.
No, but we are.
Yes, okay. The Kundalini energy, or the energy that's at the base of the spine, is the life energy that you are given. And it's as one lives rightly and makes space within oneself, the energy starts to rise. As it goes through the body, it purifies the centers or the chakras. And then it's said that when the energy rises to the crown chakra, that one is fully enlightened or awakened. What Tara Singh says is that within the space of 7 years, you can completely renew yourselves through the conservation of sexual energy. And that for young people to know that it's important not to waste that energy, is something we don't often share with our young people.
Share it with the adults too.
Right. Yeah, it's exactly the same.
7 years.
Isn't that amazing? Within 7 years.
Of course, now we are also talking about, or at least this is my inference.
Uh-huh.
We're talking about the desire for sexual energy also not being there. In other words, the desire for sex. After all, if you mm-hmm. are living 7 years in
complete celibacy.
Well, not just the celibacy, but if you're living 7 years in denial.
No.
We're not talking about that.
No.
Because that's not going to help.
No, he says that that's not celibacy.
Right.
The true celibacy.
That was the point I was trying to make across here.
No.
Celibacy and denial are totally
different. Yes. What he talks about is that when your values.
So it's a big order again. I mean, all this stuff sounds so easy and nice when you're listening to an interview and when you read a book, but let's try applying some of these things.
Right.
That is rough.
Yeah.
Especially in this society when media.
Mm-hmm.
His complete focus of media is on sex.
Exactly.
And preparing what you look like.
Mm-hmm.
It's the dance of sex day and night in front of our children, in front of us as adults.
Right, exactly.
So celibacy in our culture is going to be very difficult, if not impossible.
Yes.
Or at least, I don't mean to be, saying this so... I'm not on a soapbox, folks. But what I am saying is that you would definitely have to make changes in what you were seeing.
Yeah, exactly. What you were seeing, not to unconsciously allow these images to come into you, not to be like blindly just watching TV or reading magazines or going toward things to kill time. One of the things that he talks about is the necessity of order in life, bringing your values into alignment with this inner awakening. But to get back to the sexuality and the denial, he says that when your values are aligned within, celibacy comes about naturally. It's not something imposed. If it's imposed, it's wrong. He says not to do that. If there's a desire for sex, you're in relationship with someone, and that's a necessary form of communication, it's necessary to have that sharing, that also within the relationship it's possible to use the sexual energy to awaken yourself. It's not, he's not saying absolute celibacy is essential or necessary. He's saying don't waste the energy, but that the sexual act, the communion of sex between a man and a woman, can also be used to awaken you, to bring the mind to stillness, where there's no longer two, where the unity between you is understood and felt.
Books that were also written by Tara Singh, How to Raise a Child of God.
Yes, that was the first book that he had done on children.
A Course in Miracles, A Gift for All Mankind, How to Learn from A Course in Miracles, Commentaries on A Course in Miracles, The Voice That Precedes Thought, Dialogues on A Course in Miracles, Jesus and the Blind Man is a commentary on St. John chapter 9, The Future of Mankind, Letters from Mexico, and The Present Heals, H-E-A-L-S.
Mm-hmm.
How would we handle puberty at this point with a child? But as long as we're talking about the sex drive.
Yes.
Because that's when it begins to really show up.
Right. I think it's important for the listener and for anyone who reads the book to see that he's talking about the child's whole life. And that it's important, let's say if you read this book before you were pregnant or when your child is young, that you begin to make the changes in your lifestyle so that the strength that he's talking about is really awakened in the child when he's young. Otherwise, he says, what happens is at the moment of puberty or when puberty starts to awaken, the child is like thrown to the wind. He doesn't have the grounding or the clarity of being true to what he knows internally. So the years prior to puberty are far more important than the years, let's say, from 12 or 13 on, because the ground that the child's moving from will be his strength. So he emphasizes the time before is far more important than the time of puberty on. And I've seen that with my own child and with children at the foundation.
Right, this is like preventative medicine.
Preventative, but it's also...
In the sense that if you take care of the situations that would later arise as disease,
right.
Disease will not arise.
Exactly.
And so if you take care of these situations as the child is growing right from, well, as we started out with conception,
yes,
then we presume that puberty is going to be very, very life supporting.
Right, exactly.
Adulthood will, this person will be totally changed. As a matter of fact, how does an awakened child relate to others and to society as a whole?
Well, I think that, let me get back to this thing, though, about puberty and
sure.
About the years before.
Okay.
Basically what he's talking about is that children know their own minds. A child knows his yes and his no. He knows what he likes. He knows what he's drawn to. What we do as parents is that we make the child be false to himself. We encourage him to be false, let's say to play for attention, to go for expedient kind of things.
Now we may not do this by
not consciously,
instruction, but the child is seeing, let's say, how we live.
How we live and what we're encouraging.
Okay. All right.
You know, say thank you to your grandma, and the child may hate the thing the grandmother gave them. They may not.
So we teach hypocrisy.
We teach all those things. He says don't do that. Listen, watch, see who this child is. If a child says, I don't want to go to school, listen and find out why. Have that child know you're his friend. You see, give the child the strength to validate his own mind, his own perception, so that when he comes to puberty, he's strong. And when somebody says, tries to kind of stimulate him from the outside or goad him into doing something false, he has the strength to say no to drugs. You see, two false values, because he knows that he doesn't feel good when he's false to himself. This child can be a true friend.
Did you want to finish that?
Yeah, this child has more sensitivity. This child notices when another child's in pain and can respond because he's been given the strength all during his early years to be sensitive to himself and to others. Most of our children are not like that. They're taught to watch people die on television. We're conditioning our children to violence so that they will not respond when someone's in need. You see, I mean, it's absolute ludicrousness to do that to our children. We have this pristine mind, and then we put garbage into it, things that are so damaging and destructive. Tara Singh says, no, it's very, very important what a child's exposed to when he's young, because it will affect the kind of human being he is. It will make him either a good friend, a good parent, a good husband or wife.
So just to maybe nail this thing down here, adolescence then
need
not be what it has become known as.
No, a time of defiance. No, it's not. Adolescence need not be that. It should be a time when you give more space to your children, when you know that they need to learn things on their own, they need to make their own decisions and mistakes. And the child raised this way would know that you are their friend. You're there to support them, but not to intrude upon them.
So perhaps adolescence is nothing more than what I'm trying to say is that it is a function,
mm-hmm.
perhaps, of our society,
mm-hmm.
and not necessarily a real change.
Right, yes. I think that it's a flowering. It's a time when the child is no longer in childhood, but they start to flower into who they really are as adults.
Right, I'm talking about the negative side of adolescence.
The negative side of
adolescence. That's what I'm saying. Perhaps that's nothing more than a function of the way we have treated children, well, certainly right from the beginning.
Most definitely. But children at that
age... I'm sorry, they're different. Their defiance is, I said no from the time I was one and you didn't listen, so now at the age of 14 or 13 or 12, I'm saying no, and I'm going to say no for any reason, just to say to you that I can say no.
Yes, exactly. Okay. Because they have to do that to define themselves.
So parents have to listen.
Yes.
They have to listen long before adolescence, or I guess it's too late.
It's not too late. I think life, the amazing thing that he says is that no matter where you are, if your children even are 18 or 19, 20, grown, and they maybe have children, at whatever point you realize the significance of awakening or the significance of just listening inside and also to your children, just that change in you can bring about a change in them.
All right, so now the question that I asked before that was this. How does this awakened child, as a matter of fact, this awakened person, relate to others then, especially to society as a whole?
I think that what you see is a responsible human being, an awakened child or an awakened adult, that we are not responsible, most of us. We are taught and conditioned not to be responsible, and much more so today. There's a sense that nothing I do is going to make a difference. The problems are much too big. What he's talking about is raising children who are responsible, who will not do wrong things to the environment in their neighborhood, in their home. You see that there's an integration within their own life. If this happens on a large scale, you have a different society.
And you have no need for psychologists, I guess.
No. That's the real beauty of the Course in Miracles.
I'm sorry, psychologists. Of course we need you. I'm just, you know.
Yeah, but the Course in Miracles is written by two psychologists, Dr. Shukman and Dr. Thetford was her colleague, specifically because our problems are psychological today. We feel cut off from each other and we don't know how to bridge that gap. And the awakening a child from within addresses all of these questions within the context of A Course in Miracles.
What do we as society lose then by failing to awaken our children?
We lose, I think, making the contribution to the world that we are. I mean, America has enormous resources, enormous potentials. Just what we could have done in feeding the world. No one need be hungry because of the potentials that we have here. But, you know, the land, the water, you know, the tremendous beauty. But what's happened is greed, self-interest, motive, all of these things have prevented us from being the giving nation that we are meant to be. And at a much higher level, what he talks about is that the human being must bring the light of the kingdom of God to earth, that it can only come to the earth through the human being. If we don't awaken ourselves, then that light can't come here, and you see the proliferation of darkness, which is all the violence, all the terrible things we see on television. That's is like a witness to the fact that the human being is not bringing the light to the earth.
Tara Singh, let's talk a few minutes about Tara Singh. Who is he?
He's an incredible man, very much a self-made man. Presently, he's 72 years of age. He was born in India and then at a young age went to Panama and spent from 9 to 18 years of age in Panama, then returned to India, got married, and was very wild. He was one of these people that was so enamored by the West and taken over by Western values that when he went back to the Eastern culture, it was just horrifying to him how he felt like he was put into a box. One day, his aunt said that the family saint was coming to visit and she wanted him to go meet him. And is it okay to tell this whole story?
Go for it. It's good.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so he said that he if he saw the saint walking down the street, he would have thrown a brick at him. He said because he felt that the saints and the religious people in India were the cause of the downfall of initiative and the ability to get out of the situation that India was in relationship to Britain. But he felt that he could not contradict his aunt. She had asked him, and he had reverence for her, and so he went. When he walked into the house, the saint said to him, I hear that you want to lead a religious life. And he was just blown away by that. But he said for the first time, he heard his own voice. And he answered, yes. And the saint said, how much of your life are you going to put into it? He said, as much as Lord Rama, as much as Lord Krishna, as much as Guru Nanak. So the saint said, come and visit me in my ashram in the Himalayas, and then you need to spend time alone. So that very, he left the house, went home, packed his things, and was leaving, going out of town. And all the family is saying, no, don't go. We didn't mean that. We didn't want you to respond fully. We just wanted you to mend your ways a little bit. But he left.
Right. Once again, no one wanted the full commitment, did they?
Exactly, right. And that's what the world does. It says compromise. And he responded fully. He lived in the Himalayas for 4 years as an ascetic, and practiced the Sikh religion to the letter of the law. And what happened with him was he saw that the religion of belief is not the truth, and that everybody professes belief, but very few people. He didn't meet one person who knew the truth directly for himself, and he knew that's what he wanted. So he returned from the Himalayas, went back to his family, and got involved in the freedom movement of India. Became close friends with Prime Minister Nehru, with Mahatma Gandhi, and came to America to find out how to increase trade. And then he would give lectures. And when people would hear him, they would say, you sound so much like Mr. J. Krishnamurti. And they'd say, do you want to meet him? And he said, no, I've had my fill of Indian gurus. I don't want to meet another Indian teacher. But it kept happening over and over again. So finally he said yes. So a meeting was arranged between him and Mr. Krishnamurti in 1953. He said in the space of 20 minutes, the individual one-to-one meeting with Krishnamurti stopped his brain from projecting, and he told him that when thought moves, it's confused, and that all problems are part of the mind, problems are not outside of thought. He said that in those 20 minutes, he ended all his seeking, and a close relationship was developed with Krishnamurti. He would meet with him for weeks at a time daily, and probably for 10 years or so, he started to bring his life into order and became very, very serious.
All right, we have a few minutes. Let's talk about what the book offers to educators and child care providers.
Okay. To educators, I think that he offers the opportunity to come to more integrity as a teacher. He questions filling a child's mind with abstract knowledge. The children are not interested in that, and what you're actually teaching them is to turn off. He shows how to teach a child through interest in discovering exactly what's in front of them. It requires a tremendous change in one's values and the way you would teach a class. It would require, questioning. But he does give a lot of strength. He says that it's possible, and he shows how it's possible. To child care or daycare providers, he introduces the kind of atmosphere a child needs to grow up whole. The amount of stroking, affection, physical contact that young babies and young children need, and the importance of feeling that love when they're young.
All right, my guest today, Aliana Scurlock, we're out of time. Foundation for Life Action, the book, Awakening a Child from Within, the author is Tara Singh, Life Action Press are the publishers. Foundation for Life Action, Aliana Scurlock, thank you so much for coming on the Timeless Voyager show.
Thank you, Bruce.
All right, and I'd like to thank all of you for tuning in Timeless Voyager Radio. This is Bruce Stephen Holmes, and I hope that your own personal voyage through life towards the development of your highest potential is a joyous and successful one.